Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 347, and I am super happy to have back on the show good friend and I guess former boss in a way at Cressy Sports Performance. That is Brian St. Pierre, now of Precision Nutrition. Brian, what's up?
Hey, Kev. What's going on? Thanks for having me.
This is coming, we're recording this right after the Perform Better Summit weekend in Providence, Rhode Island, where it's always great, like, just to, you know, mention that real quick. It's always great to see all those people that are on the East Coast or in the Northeast, and they all come to one spot to see some great lectures and see people that they haven't seen in a long time. And you were actually presenting this year. What'd you present on?
I presented on the paleo diet, actually.
Oh, nice. Okay, so I was there that weekend, but I ended up having to bail on Saturday afternoon.
Having to or choosing to?
Choosing to bail, because if people know me, well, I mean, if you know the kind of the flights that I take, well, and this is coming back, talking to like Brian, who's like, yeah, I just flew in. I got in at like 4 a.m. last night from a flight, and now we're doing a podcast. But I go to all three Perform Better Summits, so I get in my continuing education for sure. And we were there starting on Wednesday to help set up for our certification event on Thursday, which is a tiring day of coaching all day. And then you socialize at night, and then you get a long day Friday, then you socialize Friday night, and it builds up. You get that sleep debt or whatever the hell you want to use for your term. And I thought, yeah, I did a really good job this weekend. I'm going to leave Saturday afternoon so I can take my dog for a walk, go down to the ocean, get a quick swim in, and maybe, I don't know, maybe watch like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Of course. It's a good movie.
That is a great movie. So, you know, again, it's a great event. You get to see a lot of good people. And just for, you know, you and me kind of like shooting it before we get into the main content, you know, it's great to see, obviously, Eric Cressy, and this year, Pete Dupuy came down, who, Brian, do you know he's been on the FitCast now?
Pete's been on the FitCast?
He was on two episodes ago.
Nice.
Talking about, I guess, just the fitness business.
Yep. And running a gym. And
exactly. What he's learned in these last, what has turned into like 8 years? God,
yeah,
or 9 years almost of, or no, yeah, they're almost at 10 years for Cressy Performance.
No, it'd be 8 years. It was 2007.
Okay,
that's when I started.
So it's really cool to catch up with Pete and to see what's different over at CSP and see how things are evolving. And yeah, it's just a good dude to chat with. Eric's talk was fantastic as always. Really can't miss stuff and seeing how they're implementing PRI with what they're doing at their facility. But yeah, you talked about the paleo diet. What kind of angle did you come in at?
Well, the title of the piece is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, right? Because paleo has a little bit of everything.
Right.
You know, there's many things that miss in my mind, like the evolutionary argument of paleo just is flat wrong. Mm-hmm. There's some really fascinating research. Well, fascinating's probably a bit of an exaggeration. It's actually brutal to read. But some research they found that they've evidence of human ancestors, they weren't even really humans yet, eating grains like 3 to 4 million years ago, like before the Paleolithic era even began. Which is, I mean, it was, I do not recommend reading those articles. It's like, it's painful. Painful. But beyond that, I mean, there's evidence of, you know, grain consumption like over 100,000 years ago, tools, evidence of cereals and grasses being ground into flour, that kind of stuff. 30,000 years ago, evidence of grains and grasses being made into flour worldwide in Paleolithic sites. So the idea that we haven't eaten grains, we haven't adapted to eating grains, because they haven't been in our diet for more than 10,000 years is just flat out false. That's not what the evidence actually shows. Same thing with like legumes. Mm-hmm. Legumes are one of the most important plant foods we've ever eaten throughout human history. They're considered to be maybe the most important plant food we have eaten throughout human history, all through the Paleolithic. I mean, there's evidence everywhere for their consumption. So the evolutionary argument about like not consuming those foods because they're too new and we haven't adapted to them just doesn't face up under scrutiny. Up under scrutiny.
But you know, it's like kind of any argument or any, I'm not even going to say like cultish, but I think like, you know, when people want to say like, I'm a this person, I'm a, you know, right. I follow this methodology or something
like that.
It's
an identity.
Right. So sometimes those facts, you know, they become blinded to them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's always like a warning sign whenever you see certain populations go all in on something. Like, it's always weird when you see, it's kind of related, CrossFit, when people just are completely bought in and it becomes just a really major part of them, almost to an obsession. That's why I'm really bummed I didn't see your talk. But I have the slides in my book. So
nice. Actually, you don't have the slides in your book because we don't give out our slides.
Oh no. Okay.
If you want to get the slides, I can share with you how to get them easily. But
we can maybe do that. Just because I'd be curious to see what your conclusions were. So this is. In the Perform Better Summits, they're really just like a melting pot of all the different aspects of the fitness industry. Like, you'll see, you know, you will see people that run CrossFit gyms. You'll see people that run more like MBSC style gyms. You'll see people that do the bodybuilding type gyms and everything in between. So I'm curious, how do you think the audience received it? Were they receptive to the information?
Yeah, I thought it went really well. I mean, I was... as you know, I was one of the last speakers, and I was in that last keynote slot, as I like to call it. It was my first time on the Perform Better circuit.
Yeah, so but that's huge. That's where everyone starts on Sunday, and you start inching your way to Sunday morning, then Saturday afternoon.
Right. So, and actually, you know what? It worked out really well going last, because I fielded like a ton of questions after I was done about, you know, all kinds of different things, the talk itself and then other nutrition questions, which I always, that's actually usually my favorite part of presenting. Like, I love giving my presentation, but I like just off the cuff, answering spontaneous questions about whatever people are wondering about. So I probably answered, you know, more than a half hour of questions. Like, Chris and Aaron were like breaking down everything behind me as I was still answering questions. I'd taken out my podium. I had to put my laptop down. But people were still just like, there's probably still 30 people just sitting in there asking me questions and listening. So that was actually kind of a cool, like, intimate, you know, Q&A session. Normally you only get 5-10 minutes at the end of a talk, and then maybe people pull you aside after. Mm-hmm. But then it's just like a weird, like, there's like a queue of people waiting to ask you questions, which is just always kind of, it just feels weird. Like it's odd that people are waiting to just talk to you. So it was nice to just field questions like from an audience like that for a long period of time. So I felt it went really well. You know, people seem to, because I try to, whenever I give talks about any topic, I try to give like an objective, balanced review. So it's, while there are things about paleo that I think are flawed, you know, the evolutionary argument, even the argument that, like, you know, grains and legumes and dairy are harmful to health, like, it just doesn't hold up under the full weight of the evidence. Yeah, you can cherry pick a few studies. Sure, you can do that against most things. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the full weight, like from different lines, different fields, what it really shows is, you know, grains are, especially whole grains, are at worst neutral for health and potentially beneficial. Legumes are definitely beneficial, even though, yes, both of them do contain some anti-nutrients. When they're cooked, they're minimal. You know, they're, in some cases, they even provide health benefits, and their actual health benefit profile far outweigh their anti-nutrient content. But, you know, and in the end, I wrapped it up with, in the end, I think paleo gets more right than it gets wrong, right? Sure. It focuses on lean proteins and fruits and vegetables, healthy fats. It's starting to evolve. People are allowing for more and greater amounts of some starches, you know, sweet potatoes. Some people are even letting in like white rice to some degree, some grass-fed dairy, right, or some red wine, right, or some dark chocolate. Like, you're seeing paleo kind of evolve away from being so strict. It still usually starts off strict, but then they're allowing people to kind of diversify their intake and see how they respond. And I think it's part of the reason why you're seeing it continue to hold court in mainstream nutrition, because it's evolving itself and it makes it a more sustainable and enjoyable intake. You know, it's hard to live a life without any of those things. You know, social events become difficult.
Right.
Any type of family gathering becomes difficult. You know, it just makes it hard to navigate for a long period of time without any of those foods, like, on your allowed list.
Well, that's super fascinating to me because, I mean, it'll be so funny when people post, like, yeah, like, I'm, you know, 100% paleo now, and they're posting a picture of them drinking like bulletproof coffee or something like that, or they're having like Chipotle. It's like they didn't have Chipotle back then.
Right. You're mimicking an idea of the Paleolithic diet, because there's no such thing as one Paleolithic diet. Like, humans consumed whatever was like seasonal, available based on their geography and opportunity. You know, so if there was like a kill they could scavenge, they scavenged it. If there were a bunch of nuts lying around, they ate those. You know, like, they ate what was there, what was in season, and then based what was around. And so if you look at throughout human history, I mean, look at the Inuit. They live on this really high fat, high protein, low vegetable, low carbohydrate diet. And you can look at other cultures that live on like in South America, I can't remember their name off the top of my head, but they get like 70% of their calories from potatoes, right? Like, this huge amount of carbohydrates. And both cultures have survived for tens of thousands of years, if not longer. And just throughout human history, there's evidence of wildly varying intakes based on the diverse environments we lived in. So there's no such thing as a, like, one paleo diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this is maybe this is a topic that we can start off with, because I think we were talking before the show, like, I've been doing this podcast for like 9 years now. So I got like a pretty good idea of the evolution of nutrition in, I would say, like, our subculture of the industry. Mm-hmm. I caught like the performator circuit, like the people that you see on the performator circuit. Like, I usually, you know, I'm up to speed with what everyone is doing. And, like, I don't know. I feel like there's some people out there that thrive on the rules. They love having, like, this is my paleo printout. Like, I have this sheet. I know exactly what I can eat. I know exactly what I can't eat. And the industry seems to be drifting a little bit more towards, like, all right, what is manageable? What is something that we can follow and be flexible for things like those social events, or, you know, just not having to say, oh, I cannot eat here because it does not follow my, the 2 pages that I printed out from the internet.
Right. Well, I think a lot of it is, and you know, I was like that when I was younger, because when you're young fitness professionals in particular, generally lead what I call like a fitness life, right? Like, when I know when I was young and in college, for example, like fitness and nutrition were like the most important things to me. I based my college class schedule around when I wanted to eat and train. You know, I had like this really specific setup. I ate like 8 times a day. but then I thought that should extrapolate out to everybody. You know, like, I was 22 and had no kids and no wife, and, you know, no house. I had no job. I had like a part-time job or whatever, but, you know, it was my most important thing in my life.
It's when you fit in those AM PM workouts.
Oh man, my schedule was built around when I wanted to lift, when the gym wasn't super busy, but when I had the most energy. You know, it was ridiculous. Not like when it was actually most important for me to go to class. It was when's the best time for me to lift and be able to squeeze in my meals between classes or whatever. But, you know, because I could do that. But then as a young coach, I tried to, like, apply that to clients. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it would, like, hit me in the face. You know, like, I don't want to live that way. Or if this just doesn't work for their lifestyle because they work 60 hours a week and they have 3 kids. And, you know, they just didn't have anything near the schedule I had. And that was just so foreign to me. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I started to realize, like, not everyone's a 22-year-old guy who can live their life, like, built around fitness and nutrition. Which is fine, you know, and so they had, and oftentimes clients have different goals. Like, if you want to be sub 10% body fat, yeah, you kind of got to live that way a little bit, or at least most of us do. Mm-hmm. But if a 40-year-old male client just wants to be like 15% body fat, you know, just fitter and healthier and, you know, and in good shape but not great shape, they don't have to live like that to get those kind of goals. And so that's the kind of thing I think as an industry we're moving towards. And part of it, I think, is just as an industry we're getting older. You know, so I think people are kind of maturing in their practice, and myself included, and kind of figuring those things out. You know, but still oftentimes as an industry, we promote what we do ourselves, thinking that's what our clients need to do.
Right.
But our clients don't necessarily always have the same goals and the same lifestyles as us. And that's the important thing to keep in mind is like, I might want to eat and live a certain way, but that might not apply to my client because they might not want to eat and live that same way. So it's about finding what they want to do and then helping them use the strategies that they need to get there, which might be different than the strategies I use or you use to get wherever you want to go.
Right. And it's just, you know, to jump off that, I remember as soon as I left Cressy's and I went to go work at a Boston sports club, like I got every one of my clients on was basically like a Cressy performance workout.
Yeah.
Like it was the same, like male, female, don't care what your goal is. I want you to try everyone's trap bar deadlifting to the point where I threatened like the boss, like I'm going to buy a trap bar if you guys don't buy one. And to be honest, like it wasn't necessarily like a bad thing. It's like, we're doing a lot of safe stuff, but like, yeah, you know, if I have someone that can come in who's like 22, like, yeah, we're going to back squat. And I don't know if today for like that general, like fitness client, if I would do that same thing,
right.
You know, even if they had all the prerequisites covered in terms of like actually able to get proper squat depth and all that stuff. So, yeah, really, it's really fascinating. It's just like, man, we're getting old. Holy crap.
Telling me, man.
We're getting old. So, you talked about the paleo diet at Perform Better. Were you able to sneak into any talks or see anyone else?
Not really. You know, like I got in like in Saturday evening and then Sunday morning I slept in because I didn't have my kids, so I could actually sleep. And then I just did a little prep work and then I came down. I don't remember who was speaking before me. Can't recall her name.
Mike Mullen spoke. Did he speak at the same time as you on Sunday?
No. I think he might have been before me in the other lecture hall. But it was a female. I can't remember her name. Tony would know because I was there with Tony.
She's from Massachusetts, and she is a hard to pronounce name. I think I know who it is.
I can't think of it. I'll think of it after. But yeah, Artemis. So I was probably like Artemis. Yeah, Artemis. There
yeah,
you go.
Sorry, I always want to say like Artemides, like I was in some like Greek like history 300 class
or something.
Yeah,
yeah. I watched a good amount of her talk, which was good.
She's awesome. Yeah. She talked about. I think it was like talking about, you know, helping women get that first bodyweight chin up.
Right. Yeah, and it was, you know, getting them to actually lift some weights.
Yeah, she's going to be on the show soon. I talked to her on like Friday or something like that. I'd love to get her on the show. She's just unbelievably strong, doing amazing stuff. She has a gym locally in Massachusetts. So
really,
yeah, nice. Iron Body Studios in West Roxbury. So I got to go check that out at some point.
Cool. Yeah. So I saw a bit of her talk, but that was pretty much it because you know I was in the keynote speaker slot. So
Very cool. It's great events. There's still time to go if you want to head to Long Beach. I will be down there, and that means you get to hang out and say what's up. Maybe get a free T-shirt. That's definitely a possibility if you come up and say hi. And, yeah, just kind of wrapping up with the Perform Better Summit. I said it after Chicago, but thank you so much to the people that came up and said hi and said that they enjoyed the podcast. Like, I really, like, please do that because, like, Brian and I are just talking to each other through Skype and I upload an MP3 file and I don't actually, like, psychologically realize that people listen to this show. So hearing that, like, literally people at the social, one person said that they, again, just like in Chicago, got into the fitness industry because of, like, the FitCast and stuff like that. It made them change their career path, which is crazy. It's just nuts.
That's always nice to hear, man.
Yeah, and you don't know that unless you, like, I'm not telepathic. So unless you come up to me and say, hey, what's up? I'm pretty friendly, you know, so I'll definitely be happy.
Sometimes awkwardly so, guys, but
no, actually I'm like really good. Like I as a professional these days, I'm great. So,
we can apply that word to Kevin Larrabee these days.
Yeah, no, totally. I think like we were joking through Twitter before the show. I'm no longer the 1985 John Elway, with a pudgy, extremely pale guy throwing a football inside Cressy Performance. I'm just happy they didn't pull up the Hooters pictures.
Yeah, you should be definitely glad they didn't pull up that picture.
Oh man, Halloween at Cressy Performance. So that's our Cressy Sports Performance. Sorry, Pete, I'm on brand. All right, so let's get into some of the questions from the audience, and we got some questions that we kind of bounced back and forth, you and I, before we got into the show. But one of the questions that we got was in terms of your certifications over there at PN for people that, get through level one and they finish that up. What's the next step? Should it be like trying to like practice what's in level one, or is it okay to just say, all right, well, I got one done. Let's go to two.
I think either approach can be fine. It depends on, what's going to work best for you. Do you already have a job lined up? How much time do you have available? Are you a student? Are you working part-time? I mean, there's no one right answer. I think either approach can hold validity because, for one thing, nothing replaces experience. That's how you learn so much as a coach, just from working with people and understanding. It gives you such great insight into people live different lives and how messy life can be, and people have different goals and different, approaches to eating and different meals you'll never even fathom could be made or eaten. You'll see on food logs and just so many things that you can't replace with experience. So in my mind, you can never go wrong getting your feet wet in coaching, whether that's an internship, whether that's a job, whatever the case might be, or volunteering. Coaching can be so beneficial to building up your skill set. But in order to become a great coach, our level two certification in my mind is unbeatable. It's the way I'm kind of framing it these days is level one kind of helps build authority. You're an authority on the subject. You are going to be nutrition competent. You're going to have some good coaching skills. But level two takes those coaching skills to a whole new level. If you want to really learn how to coach people, how to have behavior change strategies, how to have communication strategies, there's nothing better. And you can coach while doing it because throughout the program we actually have I think it's biweekly. I don't remember the exact frequency, regardless. Case studies you actually utilize with actual clients, practicing some of these skills. It's not just theory, reading, taking a quiz. It's actual application of the coaching skills that you're learning. And you have a coach, you get feedback. So either approach can be just fine. But ultimately, I would still suggest no matter what, you do both. If you go straight into L2, awesome, do it. But if you want to coach, do that too, but still go to L2 because it's going to help build your skills and really complement your coaching experience.
Yeah, just to piggyback off that, that is, you guys literally have the gold standard for nutrition certifications out there. If you want to have a really amazing foundation to have these conversations with your athletes or your clients, it is really a no-brainer. I think the biggest thing that you're going to run into is how fast, and sounds like I'm selling. I'm not I'm not selling for you, but those things sell out. Right. So you got to make sure when those dates do pop up that you jump in and make sure that you can get into that date so you can get that information.
So that'll be launching, I think, in mid-September. Okay. So people can just find that out right on our website if they're interested. So, yeah.
I will sell if you are a certified functional strength coach. We get you $400 off those certifications. Nice. Because we don't take a penny. That's how much we believe in it. We don't take a single cent out of that. We just offer that because we want all of, our coaches to be not only move well, coach well, but know their nutrition.
Right.
So we're not running into the people that are just printing off a one-page thing on the internet and saying, this is how you should eat. If you stray off this, that's why you're fat. which, oh my God, you don't realize that until you see what the industry's still like. We're in such a bubble with the people that we work with now that this is still happening. I'm still seeing people send me YouTube videos of people holding their iPhone up to them and giving them giving out nutrition advice. And I'm like,
really?
I hate these people because of how much their clients are suffering.
And how much they set our industry back.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's true. We do live in a bubble, and you forget sometimes that that's as common as it is, because that's not actual coaching. You know, that's like being mm-hmm. a trainer who just counts reps.
Right.
You know, it's not actually coaching or training anybody. You're just giving a you're helping them. You're being Google for them, essentially.
Oh, man, so gross. You guys don't need to hear us beat a dead horse, but I hope I get this name right. I'm going to say Kai. Any updates on Precision Nutrition's view on nutrient timing? How has that evolved over the last year or two?
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually wrote a big article on nutrient timing, a couple big articles on nutrient timing, workout nutrition, probably about a year and a half ago on the PN blog, where we've kind of – because we've gotten away from like the post-workout and anytime framework for – as like a starting point for clients. We still have it as a strategy. It's just a higher level strategy for people who are already lean and want to get quite a bit leaner. But for the most part, like our nutrient timing philosophy these days, for most people is pretty simple. You know, we suggest using like our hand size portion guidelines. So mm-hmm. to explain what that is, we teach people to use their hands to help dictate their portion sizes. So for a couple of reasons. One, because your hands are portable, right? They go with you wherever you go. You're at mom's house, you go to a restaurant, you travel to Japan, Kev. You got your hands there, right? You can ballpark your portion sizes.
No, I just bring eat whatever they give you.
Yeah, you go that route too.
Well, I mean, at least in Japan, like the portion sizes are super small.
Right.
It's not
at Olive Garden. That probably won't work.
True.
You know, so but they're also scaled to the individual. Like the bigger you are, the more food you need. Generally, right. The bigger your hands are, the bigger your portions. And you know, conversely, same thing. If you're smaller, smaller hands, smaller portions, smaller mm-hmm. needs. So that works really well. So what we teach is for men about 2 palms of protein per meal, 2 fists of vegetables, 2 handfuls of carbs, whether that be starches or fruits, and 2 thumbs of healthy fats. Mm-hmm. And for women, it's 1 of everything. 1 palm of protein, 1 fist of vegetables, 1 handful of carbs, 1 thumb of fats. And this assumes you eat about 4 times a day. Mm-hmm. And it's important to really note, this is just meant to be like a starting point. Right? In reality, active men probably need more like that works out to 8 servings of all of those things per day. Right? Active men probably need more like 6 to 8 servings. But we just want to give a simple single meal template. That's kind of how we set it up. But it's okay if it's some meals are a little smaller or some are a little bigger. You got to adjust it to see what fits your goals, your needs, and ultimately your results. Because active women probably need more like 4 to 6 servings of everything per day. Obviously, men don't need twice as many calories as women. Mm-hmm. But trying to keep those meal recommendations as simple and streamlined as possible. That's how we have it set up. And so in terms of like nutrient timing, like meal frequency, you know, we used to really kind of believe, well, the research seemed to indicate years ago that, you know, you should eat every 2 to 3 hours. It would help control, you know, insulin, it would help control cortisol, manage the appetite, that kind of stuff. As more long-term data came out, because that was all based on like short-term stuff, the long-term data didn't really support that. You know, JB was just a part of a big review study through the Journal of International Society of Sports Nutritionists that found that meal frequency ultimately, except for like a few specific cases, like if you have diabetes or something like that, simply does not matter. Mm-hmm. So if you like to eat 3 squares a day and you meet your macro and calorie needs, or you're within the ballparks.
Oh, the prison diet.
The prison diet?
Yeah. Let's make an ebook this weekend. We'll do the prison diet. That's how they stay so ripped. You've seen those guys in the work yard or whatever it's called, yeah, with the crappy weights.
That's not just from the prison diet, I assure you.
Okay.
You get all kinds of fun stuff brought into prison. But yeah, whether you want to eat 3 squares, some people like to eat 6 small meals or even 2 big meals, like as long as either approach is valid, mm-hmm. as long as you're able to eat some quality foods in appropriate amounts. You know, some people find eating 2 small meals, they end up being so over hungry by the time they get to the meal because they're so spaced out that they just eat whatever's in sight or they overeat. Some people find it works really well for them. So ultimately, meal frequency is a matter of personal preference. You know, beyond that, like workout nutrition, you know, a component of it, like the nutrient timing around workouts, it's, you know, we used to believe that you had like, what, 30 to 45 minutes after a workout to
the
get in
window.
Carbs, yeah, the anabolic window of opportunity. Absolutely. That was big thing. When I was younger, I sipped on a protein maltodextrose mix exactly 30 minutes before my workout started, sipped on it during, had another one after, and then like another hour later, I had my big post-workout meal. Mm-hmm. And it worked, right? I got up to like almost 220 at 5'10", you know, years ago. But I could have done the same thing without utilizing that approach. Like the research shows consistently that total intake is what matters, far more than a nutrient timing strategy. So really you have more like an hour or two on each side of the post-work, of like your actual workout time. Like your pre and post-workout meal, in other words, should be separated by like 4 hours. Mm-hmm. 4 to 5 hours. As long as you're doing that, because it takes about 4 to 5 hours for a meal to be fully digested. So if you have a full normal meal, like 2 hours before you hit the gym, those nutrients are like just peaking in your bloodstream while you're working out, you know, which is when you need them most. And then you work out for an hour, you come home, you shower, you cook yourself a nice meal, and you eat again. You're now reinfusing nutrients back in to kind of help piggyback on that pre-workout meal. But it doesn't need to be like, man, within 30 minutes, I got to have this, and I got to have it be like super fast digesting proteins and super fast digesting carbs. You know, for most people, most of the time, the research just doesn't support that. You know, if you're a really advanced athlete, or we're trying to maximize your muscle gain to the nth degree, and we just need to squeeze in calories, like, well, like we did at Krusty Sports Performance with, you know, super skinny high school athletes, we just need to get calories into these kids. Mm-hmm. You know, protein carb drink during a workout can certainly be very helpful. You know, when you're 6'3", 135, and a stiff wind could break you, that's a different scenario. Mm-hmm. But for most people, most of the time, you know, an hour or two, a normal meal an hour or two before and an hour or two after gives you everything you need.
Do you guys have any, like, branching paths for ectomorphs and, like, endomorphs when it comes to I don't know, like recommendations and stuff like that? Do you have someone identify their own body type before they go further?
Good question. So yes and no. My
favorite kind of answer.
Well, because it's context dependent.
No, totally. That's why, I mean, it's good for discussion.
Right. So for most people, I would say no. Because trying to self-identify with that kind of thing can be hard. We've just found trying to have clients self-identify, can just be tricky. People don't always do it correctly, or they want to be one thing, or they train like an endurance athlete, but they're built like an endomorph. What do I actually do? So we use that as like a level two strategy, meaning it's for people who are either more advanced or our level one strategies are not working as well as we'd like them to. Mm-hmm. So we start everybody, and not everybody, but almost everybody, you know, on our normal, quote unquote, normal approach, those hand sized portions I outlined, and then have it, you know, that meal an hour or two before and an hour or two after, and then two other meals, we'll say, built kind of like that later in other points of the day, in the morning or at night. Of course, that can be adjusted, but that's how we start most people. The body types adjustments kind of come into play if those aren't working. Right? If someone's practicing this and they're just not finding success with it, you know, so maybe they're a power athlete, or they're relatively sedentary. They have a very sedentary job, right? They don't. Let's say they're a surgeon and they have to spend a lot of time just standing and working on people. They don't actually have a physically active job. You know, maybe for them, because their activity levels are lower, we give them more of an endomorphic approach where we cut down their carb intake a little bit because they just don't need that high amount of carbs. They're not active enough to warrant that kind of carb intake. Or if someone has like a metabolic syndrome or they're pre-diabetic, I don't cut the carbs down super low, but the endomorphic approach would be for men, rather than having two handfuls of carbs at each meal, you'd have one handful of carbs and then an extra thumb of fats. For women, it would be like a half a handful of carbs and like an extra half thumb or thumb of fats at meal. So it's a slightly lower carb, slightly higher fat. And then if you're an endurance athlete, right, and the normal approach isn't enough to meet your competitive needs or your running needs, we can put you on like an ectomorphic plan where you've got, for a male, three handfuls of carbs at each meal, and for a woman, two handfuls of carbs at each meal. We're just trying to up the carbs, maybe pull back the fats a little bit depending on your calorie needs. So yes, we do the body type adjustments, but only if our regular approach isn't sufficient, isn't getting the results we want.
Awesome. All right. Yeah, no, you definitely answered that one. Okay. This is where I like to take a second to thank everyone that is supporting the show through Patreon at patreon.com/thefitcast. People are stepping it up and helping to support the show with a financial contribution for each and every episode. And it really means a lot. It allows me to set aside the time to do these shows every single week to make sure that they keep coming to you. And thank you for Ryan Y, who just jumped on yesterday at the time of this recording. First person to jump on last week. So thank you, Ryan, for your contribution. And also, I want to call it like some of like the superstars, like Ryan Goldie, who I know, he's out in Japan. Sam K, also, Mark Davidson, who is just the man. Mark is a really great guy. Jim Ward, one of our adults over at MBSC. He is just the best. He's been supporting the show, since literally this started. And Tom Venuto, who is just an absolute superstar. That guy, is really the best. And Seth Gibson, who I know, I've known for a long time, just an amazing guy. Luis, who I saw over at Perform Better, came down from Canada, rubbing in his Montreal Canadiens bull crap in our face. But he's also the man who's been supporting the show since day one. And, you know, people like Carrie and Dave Ballantyne, who's been a long time listener to the show. And I just bring this up because it really, like, I wouldn't be able to do the show without the support from the audience, just because I got so many other things going on these days. And you guys have helped me make this like a, you know, part-time job. So, if you do enjoy the show and you do want to help, support it, it really means a lot. Like literally like a dollar per episode, that $4 per month is gigantic. And people were asking last week, people were asking like at, the summit, like, you know, what's your Patreon supporter like ratio? It's like 0.3%. I think, or it's 0.03% of the audience supports the show, which is awesome. Like, not everyone can support the show for financial reasons or think it's worth supporting, which is totally cool too. The show is always going to be free, but I want to make sure that if people do feel like it's worth supporting, there's an outlet for you to do that. So that is patreon.com, patreon.com/thefitcast. Means so much. You get those episodes early, a dedicated RSS feed, and also get the occasional agenda-free FitCast episode with the great people that you hear on this very podcast. So thank you so much for all you out there. So, Brian, I want to talk to you. This is a personal question. So I have I take middle school athletes now, and it is hard as hell to get them to eat. Like, this is something we battle every single year. Every single session is getting our young athletes to give a crap about nutrition and doing even the simplest things of eating breakfast, or even more crucial, like eating before coming to a group that's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon because they stay up until 3 a.m. watching Netflix. I'm not kidding. Like, this is the stories. Like, they, like, I have these middle school girls that watch Pretty Little Liars until 3 a.m. on Netflix, or One Tree Hill. I know.
One Tree Hill.
Yeah. I have girls in my group that just started watching One Tree Hill. They're starting at the beginning, and they there's a lot of that garbage show to go around. So,
wasn't that like an early 2000s show, like Sophia Bush?
I was forced to watch that in college by someone I was dating. So I have a lot of despair for that show. But any advice or any tips to see if, like, we even have like goal sheets. We have sheets that talk about great breakfast choices, as simple as getting like chocolate milk, getting a like an egg sandwich or something like that, or like literally just having toast and peanut butter, just getting something in them so when they get to the gym, they just don't look like literal zombies.
Right. I mean, yeah. It's been a while since I've worked in that realm. You know, at Krusty Sports Performance, that's mm-hmm. a big part of what I did, working with high school athletes and some younger athletes too. I mean, for the most part, especially when they're that young, you're not going to like logic and reason them into it. That part of their brain's just not fully developed. You know, it's right. Like trying to reason with my 4-year-old. It's just that part of their brain just doesn't quite work like ours do. Mm-hmm. So really, it's got to be keeping it super simple. I think you guys kind of have the right approach where it's like, you know what, something is better than nothing. It's not about, well, you got to have this three-egg omelet with vegetables in it and, you know, Ezekiel toast with only natural peanut butter. Like, fuck, you know, you've lost them, right? It's just right. so far beyond their normal that they're just going to look at you like you're crazy. And so it's about keeping it super simple, what to do, how to do it. Mm-hmm. Don't try to, you know, wow them with the why they're doing it or what the physiological benefits are going to be. They're just going to glaze over.
Right.
That's not how you're going to connect with them. So it's got to be, you know, really simple things in terms of like how it's going to help their performance, how it can help them be better at their video games, you know, how it can use it, apply it to their real life. Right? It's going to help you with, you know, your performance in the sport, to help you with the performance and maybe in school if they're a student who's really into that, or even with their video games. Yeah, it'll give you more energy, it'll give you more focus so you can, you know, beat so-and-so at whatever game they play, because you know, they talk about it.
We always talk about games.
I'm sure you too. You always did.
I got my Xbox One and my that's why I think I'm able to connect with those, like, that age group so well, is because, like, yeah, I got a PS4 and an Xbox One. You know, I got the new Call of Duty. We can talk about it. Or, like,
You play against some of them.
No, I don't. But at Cressy Performance, like, I always had those athletes that, like, were into video games who just weren't really interested in lifting.
Right.
But I could get them to, like, do some dumbbell bench while we talk about, I don't know, like, God of War or something like that.
Yeah, man, that's a big part of it. It's like, first, it's connecting with them so they know that, you know, you've got some similar interests or you understand their passions, and then you got to apply it to how it can help them with whatever they're interested in.
Right.
So, it's just about a progression. If they're eating nothing, some peanut butter toast would be a big step up, right? We're getting some quality carbs in, some healthy fats. They're getting some calories in them that's not coming from a Pop-Tart or a Monster Energy drink.
Right.
You know, so absolutely, if they can have an egg sandwich, hell yeah, have an egg sandwich. But that requires extra steps, right? They got to cook the egg, especially if their parents aren't doing it for them.
Well, we usually say, like, we actually have, like, a thing that says, you know, this is, like, kind of worst case scenario. Go to McDonald's, get two egg McMuffins, take the, like, the bread part out of the, take the bottoms off, put the two egg pieces together, and, like, don't get, like, I forget, there's something that we say not to get on or something like that, just because it's, like, you know, super high in, like, fat or something like that, but that's it.
Like the bacon or something? Or sausage?
The sausage, I think.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, hopefully, worst case scenario, but it's certainly better than what some of the alternatives might be. You know, someone crushing a bunch of donuts or having a bunch of, you know, sausage, egg McMuffin.
I had the other day, and this is to give you, like, if you don't work with young athletes, I'm going to give you the reference of what I have come through the door. Kids with blue mouths. Because they just had a gigantic slushy from the gas station. I'm not kidding. Like, right before training, having that. Or, like, my big victory was, like, one of these girls that, again, we train at 3:30, okay? And the most she was able to get in before coming in and training was some goldfish, and she ate a raw egg on a dare.
Wow.
That was the food up into that point. But again, hopefully it's like, you know, we just try to, like, push the needle a little bit every single time and see if we can get them to at least think about it a little bit and just say, oh yeah, I know Kevin's going to ask me what I had for breakfast today. You know, at least I get to make up a good answer if I didn't have it.
And that's a big part of it. Like, at my time at Cressy Sports Performance, I never get it right. That's what I would always do. I'd walk around and ask kids what they ate, ask kids what they had, and they would come to expect it and know. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, maybe they were bullshitting me. But I think just by having that accountability, knowing that I was going to come and hold them accountable to it, and, you know, and the expectations weren't to have a five-egg omelet, like I'm saying. The expectations were to have something just mildly reasonable. Mm-hmm. We'd have kids go push the sled, right, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they want to pass out because they hadn't eaten since, like, lunch at 10:45. And they're just, you know, your body's just struggling to find glucose. So, you know, that was definitely a big part of it, holding people accountable. But it's just about progressing them on the continuum. It's not about getting them to eat ideal. If they're willing to go that route, by all means, go that route. But you got to base it on the client. And so progression is the key. So, yeah, if you can get that female athlete you just talked about to instead maybe have, like, a string cheese and some goldfish, you know, rather than a raw egg or something. I mean, is string cheese ideal? No, it's probably far from ideal. But at least getting some protein in her, it's getting some fats in her, and then she's getting some carbs with the goldfish, and it's not like an incredible amount of calories. Is it? It's far, far from an A-level meal, but it's going to at least help her get through her session without crashing. You know, and then you slowly progress it from there. Okay, we're doing that for a while. She's comfortable with that. Maybe we can, you know, make some improvements from there.
Right. And again, I wish you could all see this, like how excited they were to say like, yeah, and I had an egg today on a dare. And like they like filmed it and put it on Instagram or some crap like that. Like that is how they got in some protein and fat before training.
And that's just it, man. They're young. Like it's just not on their radar. It wasn't on my radar when I was a kid. You know, I didn't worry about like the quality of my food. I mean, my parents, you know, cooked a bunch of my meals, but like I made myself breakfast. I had a waffle with peanut butter.
Eggos, man.
Yeah, it was an Eggo waffle with peanut butter with a banana. Protein wasn't even on my radar. You know that, and that's not surprising. And you're not going to necessarily get them to be passionate about their nutrition, but just increasing, getting them to be starting that awareness now will pay large dividends down the road.
Well, we'll start wrapping things up before we do. I know, Bri, you got a lot of stuff coming up. Anything that people should keep an eye out for in terms of like speaking engagements or things that is going to be posted up on PN?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, like I said, we got the certification launch coming up in September. So if people are fitness professionals and they're interested in that, I definitely encourage them to check that out. In terms of speaking, I've done majority of my public speaking for the year, but I've got the Cressy Sports Performance annual fall seminar. Right. I'm sure I'll see you at. I don't think there's a set date for it. It's usually in like mid to late September. So definitely keep an eye out for that. I'm sure Eric will announce that soon. And then even beyond just me, I mean, we've got like Krista Scott Dixon and JB and a guy named Adam Feit who all speak on behalf of PN. That all do, I mean, phenomenal jobs. Obviously, they're, you know, JB and Krista especially are well-known commodities. And Adam's like a guy we've been working with for a while, and he's been fantastic. If you can just check that out, go to like precisionnutrition.com upcoming-seminars, and you can see all of the seminars we've got, like even the private ones I do with some of the sports teams I work with, like the Spurs and the Browns and stuff, you know, and things of that nature. But we've got a whole bunch of public ones. I'm just not doing many more public ones for this year beyond the Cressy Sports Performance one.
Hey, man, you've been traveling like crazy.
I've traveled enough. Right. Traveled enough.
Yeah, definitely go to PN. Like, even if you know, you just go in there and you kind of check out their blog and see the stuff that they're posting on there. They're posting stuff on there throughout the month, and you know, straight up, like we print out a lot of this stuff and we show these to our, you know, our adult groups and our adults that come through the door. And it's just you guys have the best stuff. It's just hands down. There's no other place you should really go. Just check out Precision Nutrition. .com and
Kevin, we actually got not to cut you off, we have this piece coming out that I've been involved with peripherally, but it's mainly JB's thing, about like how PN coaches, and it, just to keep an eye out for it, because honestly it's phenomenal. I used part of it for a talk I just did in London at FitPro Live. People loved it. It's about how we have a system and what the system looks like and how to actually apply that to clients. So you're not just pulling habits out of a hat or just putting everyone on the same habit program. It explains the whole process of how to do it, how to look at a client, how to determine what they need, and then how to have a plan moving forward. It's honestly kick ass. It's really, really good. We're gonna have an article, an infographic. I'm not sure when it's done and when it's being posted. I think it'll probably be within the next, handful of weeks, but just to keep an eye out for it, because honestly, if you're a fitness professional, like, it is a must have.
Yeah, and I just to say one more thing about the website, if you go on the blog, one of the things that I've been using when people send me questions about this is you have a bunch of blog posts on individual supplements, like the supplements that you always get questions about, like creatine and vitamin D and fish oil and glutamine and BCAAs, and like, you guys just break it down. You tell us exactly where it's coming from, how we can utilize it, how much we should take, or how much you recommend we take. So if you just like don't want to have to deal with that client, it's like, oh, how much fish oil was I supposed to have again? Yeah, just print this out and give it to them. And that way you don't have to keep answering. I don't miss that. I don't miss answering all those questions. It can get kind of crazy. But yeah, that's going to do it for this show. This was a fun one, Brian. I was worried. Like, I didn't sleep a lot. I know you were coming in from a flight, but you brought it. I didn't drink a spike, but I had a caffeinated beverage.
Yeah, I was drinking my coffee during the show.
I had spike for the first time last weekend at the Perform Better Summit in almost 3 years.
I can't even remember the last time. The last time I had a spike, I was probably at Cressy Sports Conference getting in a lift. That was years ago.
It's that dumb Will Ferrell thing. Like, once it touches your lips, it just tastes so good.
It's like, probably even before that. You just probably just cracking it open, just hearing the sound of it.
I swear to God, like, as soon as I drank it, I already had the energy. Like that first sip, like, I just had the excitement, the energy from the excitement. I didn't even need the rest of the drink. The
adrenaline pumping just from the excitement of having a spike.
Oh, man, it was, I missed that. Sad. I missed that 25,000% of my daily B6 vitamins. Yeah. So I bought a 4-pack on the way back from the summit. So anyways, that is going to do it for this episode. Make sure you check out precisionnutrition.com. Check out thefitcast.com. You can download episodes on there. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. It really means a lot if you go in there and you submit a review for the show and you hit that subscribe button. Really doesn't do much except, you know, mess around with the rankings on there to make sure that people, if they're looking for a fitness show, that they're, or a fitness and nutrition show, they're getting some good content and not some of the maybe the more scare tactically titled shows that are on there now, which is kind of gross, but you know, it is what it is. And also, like I said before, patreon.com/thefitcast. I know you might be sick of hearing me say that, but the people that are supporting me through there and the people that have helped through PayPal, you guys are the superstars that have allowed me to continue to do this. So I'm going to continue to thank you, because that's how much you mean to me and you mean to the continuation of this show. So that's it. We're going to be coming back next time with... I don't know, but like I said, Artemis is going to be coming up. Brett Bartholomew, I have locking down a date from over at Exos. There's a couple of Cassandra Forsyth, who we keep bouncing back dates back and forth, who's also a mutual friend of ours, Brian and ours. Cass is just amazing. It's been way too long since I've had her on the show. She just kicks ass. And yeah, lots of great content from you coming up. And I posted on Facebook, but... I think it pressures them into it. Jen Sinclair and Jill Coleman, I'm going to get on one joint episode to talk about just a lot of stuff, like empowering women, getting women stronger, you know, the things that they talk about in terms of getting people on goal, on task, and making sure that they stay where they need to be. Just because we had such a great time on that Agenda Free Fitcast episode with the two of them together. It was just awesome, and they just do such a great job, both of them. Why not do a three-person podcast? So, again, yeah, Brian, thank you so much for coming on. It's always a blast to catch up, talk to you. I'm bummed I didn't see you at the summit, but... I'm super bummed, but... I needed a day of recovery, because it's not even 2 weeks until I fly off to Long Beach and I get to do this all over again.
Well, you'll probably see JB out there, so at least maybe you can at least see one PN talk.
I saw
him in Chicago.
I saw 2/3 of his talk in Chicago, and then I had to bounce and get on a flight back to Boston. So that's the way it is. Do your best and continue to educate yourselves out there. If you're in the field, it means a lot. We got to continue to raise the tide. What is it called? High tide raises all the boats or something?
Rising tide.
There you go.
Raises all boats.
See you next time.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Kev. So good.